One of the most anticipated historic aircraft that people have been looking forward to seeing is the PBY Catalina from the American Heritage Museum. Rob Colling is here. And Rob, what was it like to bring that in and then watch the crowd gather around the airplane Sunday night when you arrived?
Boy, this has been a long journey with this PBY. Yeah. It's so special. 7 years ago, we flew the aircraft from the Netherlands all the way across the North Atlantic, which is a absolute bucket list experience.
Yeah.
The Atlantic is really, really big when you're flying over it, but when you see a ground speed of 90 knots, it's depressingly large. But the plane flew perfectly for 40 hours across the North Atlantic, came to Florida, and that's when the restoration journey started. So an amazing crew at American Aero Services has been spending the last 7 years bringing it back to exactly the way it was on August 20th, 1942, when it achieved its first of many U-boat victories.
Yeah.
They have found all the original equipment to go back into it, restored the paint to the way it was at that time. In fact, there's even some of the original paint still left on the airplane. It's just been an amazing experience, but without them putting in blood, sweat, and tears, it wouldn't be here.
Good. Well, let's go back to the beginning of this airplane. It's actually a pre-war Catalina, and which is pressed into service. And you mentioned the one sub that it sunk, and one has two and a half, right?
So the aircraft was built pre-December 7th, 1941. It is the fourth amphib Catalina ever made, the 300th Catalina total. And then December 7th comes along, we're in the war.
Yeah.
So they take the first 10 amphibs and send them to Iceland because, believe it or not, Iceland is icy, so it's not really good for flying boats, and they had lost all the planes they had there in a storm. So these planes came into Iceland and started flying patrols over the North Atlantic. And you understand the North Atlantic, the battle for the Atlantic was the biggest geographic battle of the war, the longest battle of the war, and it was also statistically the deadliest. So the highest attrition rate of any U.S. service member was the Merchant Marine.
Yes.
Not the 8th Air Force, right. Not the U.S. Marine Corps. These guys were getting annihilated by U-boats. Conversely, on the Axis side, the most deadly place to be was on a U-boat. So just being in the North Atlantic was deadly.
Yeah.
But then you add in this battle going on. So our PBY 2459 started flying missions 70 days before the Doolittle raid. That's how early it is in the war.
Yeah.
At one point, the squadron commander, Gallery, he was upset that the guys had not sunk a U-boat yet. So he was going to motivate them. And what do you do to motivate them? You close the officers' club because it's 1942 Reykjavik. That's all they have to live for. And then our PBY was out on a mission August 20th, and it spotted a milk cow, which was the oiler version of submarine. So it was supplying fuel to other U-boats, and dropped the depth charges on it. One of them landed on the deck of the U-boat, and a brave sailor ran out there to push it overboard, which was the last thing you want to do because it explodes once it has that pressure of the sea. And the ship started going down. There was like four of the crew members killed. The rest were picked up by an Icelandic fishing boat. And at that point, with the ship, the U-boat going down, they typed a message in Morse code back to the home base, sunk sub open club, because they wanted their officers club open again. But that was the start of the journey. The aircraft has spotted 13 U-boats in its career, attacked 10, sunk 3, had a shared kill of a fourth, and severely damaged a fifth. Okay. So it is the most successful anti-submarine aircraft in history. And we know exactly the U-boats that went down. We know how many people were killed on those boats that went to the bottom of the ocean. What you can't quantify is how many people did it save.
Right.
Because of all those convoys going across, one of those ships could have been full of troops with thousands of guys. We know for sure thousands of aircraft, thousands of tanks, tens of thousands of trucks were sunk when they left their cover.
Right.
What did that mean to the war effort? How many more days would it go?
Right.
And if the Germans were successful in stopping that supply chain, that was their one chance of winning the war. So the battle for the Atlantic was absolutely critical.
Yeah. It's amazing when you think about it, because we do think about the convoys and the U-boats wolf packs, that sort of thing. But now you've kind of put it in a different perspective with, you knew the losses, but now we're looking at this airplane that's here, and you realize that even though it may be a very slow two-engined flying boat, it really did play a significant role in the war. And again, we'll never know because we won't, but we do know that it definitely was. It was a successful mission several times over.
Oh, absolutely. And you say very slow, which is the pejorative everyone says about PBYs, and it's absolutely true. It's a 105-knot airplane. But when you're flying over convoys, you don't need to be going 200 knots. Right. You want to be going slow with them to go up and back and protect them. Yeah. And the amazing thing is it's endurance. Yeah. So these missions were 10 to 12 hours long over the Atlantic. And I'll tell you, when we flew back, I'd never been so cold in my life on that flight. We had an 11.5-hour flight from Iceland to Goose Bay. We were freezing. Yeah. That was June.
Yeah.
These guys were flying in January, February, March. The conditions up there, the amount of icing that we'd get, the low ceilings, just to survive flying, in the case of this airplane, 1,600 combat hours is remarkable. Let alone, they were in gunfights. The U-boats didn't, they weren't dropping a acoustically homing torpedo until the end of the war.
Right.
The U-boats were fighting on the surface, and a PBY has a 30 caliber machine gun facing forward. The U-boat has 4 20-millimeter cannons, 40-millimeter guns, some had 88-millimeter guns. It was a formidable thing to go up against, but they did it day after day.
What happened to the airplane after World War II?
Well, again, it's a lucky airplane because it survived World War II. It survived being in the North Atlantic, and then it still went into a Coast Guard role in 43, dropped the first lifeboat ever from an airplane. So it has a lot of firsts throughout its life. And then it was picked up, and thank God, you know, there were fire bombers.
Yep.
They would use these aircraft, and that's how they survived, because otherwise they would have been scrapped.
Right.
And it made it through. Firebombing's not an easy task.
No.
It survived all of these different things, and thank goodness it you know, made it over to the Netherlands, where the previous owners had it for 20 years, had restored it mechanically, and maintained it absolutely impeccably. So it's had a lot of great stewards over the years.
Good.
We're happy to be the ones right now.
Good. You mentioned mechanically. So when you did the restoration, were there a lot of mechanical things that you had to take care of? I mean, corrosion,
you know,
that sort of thing?
That was the great part of this aircraft. Not only were we starting with the best history PBY ever, but we're starting with probably the best maintained, no corrosion, believe it or not, because its life was not air, sea rescue. It wasn't landing in water.
Right.
It was taking off from land, flying its missions, and a lot of people come up, how many people did it rescue? Well, none directly.
Directly, yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't have all those corrosion issues that we had to deal with. There was a lot of sheet metal of just because windows had been cut into the side as an airliner, escape hatches, all the firebombing equipment and everything like that. But structurally, it was very little. It was mostly bringing it back to 1942.
Good. Any parts that were particularly hard to find?
Everything.
Everything?
Everything, because the aircraft is such an early war airplane.
Right.
The Navy had completely separate radios and equipment than Army Air Corps. And then additionally, it has radar, which is amazing for the time, but it's British.
Yeah, right.
So it's this amalgamation. And even the flare gun in the airplanes from World War One, because pre-World War II, we're not building tens of thousands of these for bombers. So it was an absolute challenge. And again, Casey Luttrell and the crew down there, they had to fabricate a lot of these pieces to put in the airplane. And when you take someone through, you want to show them everything, and maybe they catch 1% because there's so many little details. Such a, you know, a 60-foot-long tube, which when you have it empty is big. Once you put all the equipment in there, you're climbing through, and it's really tiny. And you think about 10 guys who were in that airplane for that length of time. But they do have some conveniences. They actually have bunks.
Yep.
They have cooktops, because if you're going to be out in freezing cold weather for that long, having a hot coffee or cup of soup means a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely. The airplane is on display at the Warbirds ramp. You're right up next to all the buildings.
We're actually further down right now. Okay. We did the Warbirds in review yesterday, okay. And I believe for the rest, we're flying in the show tonight at 8 o'clock. So yeah. We're really thrilled about that, along with Red Bull and the B-29. It's an absolute honor, and then we'll be down on Boeing Square, I think, for the rest of the week.
Sounds good.
Yeah,
Rob, appreciate you being here this morning.
Thanks
spending
for having
some time
me.
With us, and also for bringing this gorgeous airplane here.
Oh, I didn't mention. It's going to spend the next year here. So go to the EAA Museum,
yes.
And you can see it. If you miss it here, you can always come back.
All right. I will look forward to that.
Yeah.
That is going to wrap up our show for today. From the stand, I'm Steve Buss, and this is EAA Radio.